Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, today my guest is Jessica Rose Johnson, who is a Marine Corps veteran who was medically discharged from the Marines in 2011. Since then, she's continued to serve veterans in a variety of roles. Today, we're going to talk specifically about her work with homeless veterans and suicide prevention. So welcome to the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Yes. So thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here and talk more with you. So like you said, I'm a Marine Corps veteran. I'm also a Navy spouse. I'm a daughter of dual Air Force veterans. So it's kind of interesting. I have a long lineage of military. And I've been in the prevention field now for, it's been over 6 years. Actually, I was just calculating that today. So it's a really exciting experience. It's not what I went to school for. So I usually kind of like to tell people I actually went to school for crime intelligence analysis and religion and culture. So those are my masters. I like people and I like research. So prevention just fell in my lap and it made sense. And I love everything that I get to be involved with and really just teach people how to be people.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting how people find out that, you know, what they went to school for isn't necessarily the thing that they end up doing. I have an accounting degree and I work in, you know, this is not my full-time job or anything, but this is, I work in software development. So like, it has nothing to do with my degree at all. And it's pretty interesting how so many people that I've talked to on this show have kind of changed gears along the ways, with their careers and everything. So let's take a step back a little bit to your time in the military around the time of your discharge, when you got out of the military. Was this something that you saw coming and had an opportunity to plan for, or was this more of a sudden change than you would have liked it to be?
So when it comes to my discharge getting out of the Marine Corps, I say it's kind of both. Like, I knew it was coming, but it was also quick at the same time. I was on a med board for a little over a year, and my injury was in 2007. I didn't get surgery till 2010. And then by the time I was on a med board, I sustained another traumatic injury. So I knew I was getting out. I knew I wasn't going to be able to stay in the Marine Corps. However, it was the when. So I went past my EES and I literally one day woke up, logged in and was like, oh, I was supposed to leave last Friday, because good old Marines, they can't do math. So it was quicker than I anticipated. So I had that, like, I know it's coming for about a year, but then it was like, oh, it's here. It's now. Well, that was fast. Where's my PTAD? Right. So definitely interesting experience.
So did you get a chance to like prepare for what the next steps were going to be for you, like after you got out of the Marines? Or was it something like, oh my God, this is here, and I didn't do anything to prepare for what's next for me?
I am an overprepared person. So I had a plan A, B, and C. And unfortunately, God had a whole different plan. So everything fell to shits. Like plan A, plan B, plan C. I was working my way into plan D and realizing like, this just really isn't working. So I had a really great plan set up. You know, I was going to get out. I had my associate's degree. I was going to start my bachelor's. I was renting a room from this person. I was going to work at this place. And every part of every plan just fell through to where I was sleeping in my car outside the officer's park, because I felt that was like the safest place to be, is on base, the officer's park, you know. And I finally called my parents and said, yeah, I don't think this is going to work. I think I need to come home.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So planned, but plans did not work.
Yeah. I mean, the best plans, and that's part of the military in general, is you plan for plans to not work, and
yes,
you know, contingency plans and, you know, backups and everything like that. You have to plan for it to not work, because there's just unforeseen circumstances that come into play. But you obviously have a calling to serve others. You know, the fact that you joined the Marine Corps to begin with, that's, you know, serving your country. That's one aspect. But after you got out of the Marine Corps, you have continued to serve veterans throughout the whole time, you know, basically since you've gotten out. And you've continuously worked to serve other veterans in a variety of roles, right? So where does this calling come from for you? You know, is this something from that you learned from, you know, other family, or is, you know, how where did that come from for you?
I think my calling to serve is in my blood. You know, my whole family has served in the military. So my parents, all the way back to the Revolutionary War, like each generation has served. Oh, wow. And my mom has just always been such a loving, giving person. And I think it's just because of her experiences in life, you know, that there's so many people living that have these basic life needs that aren't being met. So how can we be giving people, you know, we're all grateful and fortunate in our own ways. And yes, there's always that person who's worse off than we are, but how can we be a better person to help other people? You know, I think it's just in my blood. You know, my whole family served, and having that kind of mentality from my mom is how can we help other people?
Right. Well, so if we could, I'd like to take some time to talk about your work with the Supportive Services for Veteran Families, which for the listeners is it's a program that helps veterans who are either homeless or on the brink of becoming homeless. And there's probably a lot to unpack there as far as the, you know, what it is that you do, or that you've done with the homeless, veterans and these other, people that are involved there. I guess let's start with how veterans even get to the point of homelessness, you know, which might be a loaded question, I think, since there's not just one root cause for, you know, why someone becomes homeless. But if there are some trends that you've noticed along the way, it might be good to try to understand some of those to, you know, hopefully avoid those situations and with some of the listeners here.
So when it comes to homelessness, it is, like you said, a loaded question, right? There's a lot of different reasons why people become homeless. But the one thing that I saw is a lot of people have relationship issues. So when the gentleman on my caseload that I had, and I say gentleman because my particular caseload, I never ended up having a female on my caseload, mm-hmm. but not to say that there's not homeless female veterans.
Correct.
So the gentleman that were on my caseload, there was a lot of relationship stuff. So, you know, recent divorce, or there was a child who ended up with a disability and, you know, the mother didn't want to be involved in the picture, or death. So lost significant other by death, different things like that. And that really kind of changes the dynamics. But in all seriousness, it's almost a loss of anything. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times you see is we lose identity in ourselves. So we lose a relationship with ourselves. We don't really know who we are. We're searching, we're lost. And you see that a lot in the veteran community because, you know, here we served, right? I would say I'm a Marine, and people's response is way different than when I say, oh, I'm a Marine Corps veteran. Right? It's like, oh, I'm a Marine. I am something. I'm part of this brotherhood, right? And then you get out of the military and you're like, I was a Marine. How does this translate? Who am I now? So you go through almost like this identity crisis, but that happens when we lose relationships too. So when we lose relationships, either by a divorce or by death, right? There's a part of us that we've lost. So again, that kind of identity, what do? And if we don't have the good old resiliency, right? the mm-hmm. popular phrase there, if we don't have the resiliency, if we don't have the support systems to get us through those moments, then our health just falls completely apart. Right. So, you know, you build up a loss of divorce, right? So there's an income change there, right? Now there's a housing change. So you're now looking for a job. Maybe you didn't have money to even afford a house. Maybe you're couch crashing, right? You get depressed. You're going through that self-identity crisis. And the people you're couch crashing with is like, hey, you got to get your life together, but you can't get out of this depressive state and you can't figure out who you are now without that person, right? So it's kind of this snowball effect of things. And I really think a lot of health in general fall into that. So mental health, physical health, whatever the case may be, is that it's our health. So when our brain's not healthy, our bodies can't be healthy. Right. And we get to a point to where we give up. Right? We're so weak. We just don't have the energy anymore to keep fighting. Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, once people become homeless, a lot of times is then that becomes a new identity. So they found maybe their place. They have a group of people now. They've established a lifestyle and they start moving forward and they start to get used to it.
Right.
So if you try and change that, they're a little apprehensive because now that's them, that's who they are. So their identity has now been reformed. And we saw this in one gentleman on my caseload is we got him into a hotel and he said, it was too warm. The bed was too soft. You know, it wasn't what he was used to. So then what happens? The identity changes again. So now they're questioning their relationship with themselves. Well, you know, the relationship with the people that I was living on the streets with, or I was in the shelter with. So now it's again, a change of environment, a change of self, a change of relationships. So it's hard that once someone ends up homeless to then see the change in no longer being homeless, getting them into housing, getting them into employment, getting them back into a whole nother new identity. So when I think of homelessness and how people become homeless, yes, there's a ton of different reasons, but a lot of it is linked back to relationships and our self-identity and our self-worth.
Yeah. I've never really thought about it that way. You know, fortunately I've never been homeless myself. So it's not something that I've ever had personal experience with, but that loss, you know, like you said, in a relationship with, maybe a divorce situation or something where now you have to try to find a new place to live. And then, you know, it is a depressing thing. And I know a little bit about depression and how that affects people. And you kind of just lose the desire to be motivated to do the things that you know you're supposed to do. You might even have a checklist of things. Okay, I know I need to get these things done, but then, you know, just getting out of bed in the morning sometimes is a really hard thing for you to do. Never mind going and taking a shower and getting a suit on and going on a job interview and trying to better your life and go looking for houses and all that kind of stuff. If you can't even force yourself to get up in the morning, you know, how can you expect that you're going to do all that stuff? So there's probably a lot of, you know, mental health aspects surrounding that as well. But through, you know, other catalysts that take place, whether it's, you know, a divorce or, you know, the loss of identity after your service or whatever. So that's interesting. So how did it work with you and, these homeless folks that you worked with, how is it that you were able to help them get out of this situation that they were in, you know, to try to rediscover who they were and kind of create that new identity?
So one thing with SSVF, the Supportive Services Veterans Families, is it's housing first. So it's really evidence-based where you got to sustain those basic life needs, right? So if we can sustain that, then we can work on sustaining income. We can work on sustaining employment. So a lot of what I did was kind of interesting and kind of risky too. So I am who I am. I wear dresses, I wear heels, and I would walk into homeless camps and I would smile and say, "Hi, my name is Jessica Rose. I'm looking for veterans. Are any of you a veteran? Do any of you know who's a veteran? Here's my card. I'll be by next Tuesday," you know, whatever the case may be. And some of them would come through where there is a screening process for that program specifically. So majority of them would come through the screening process and we'd be assigned. But my thing was, is like, they're there somewhere. And if we don't know where they are and they don't know about the screening process, maybe it's just not a good time for them, because some people it's just not. I had a gentleman on my caseload, loved him to death, loved his honesty, where there's certain things that we have to know, right? So if it's housing first, to get you into housing, if you have a felony, depending on what kind of felony you have, we can't house you in certain areas,
right?
So that, you know, as long as you're up front and you tell me, hey, I have this felony, for example, I cannot live within a certain distance of a school, right?
Right.
Okay, now I know I can work with that. You know, we can find a place that'll work for you. Or if you have a pending felony, right? Well, you could go to jail at any point. So really we can't stabilize you into housing. We got to stabilize your legal situation to make sure if we get you into housing, you can stay in that housing,
right?
So there's a lot of those things that kind of come up, and just having those honest and open conversations with them and saying, look, like, I'm not here to judge you. Okay. We all screw up in life, right? I'm here to help you. And the best way I can help you is by you being as honest as possible. So having those hard questions and asking them, hey, do you have any felonies? And one of my guys said, yeah, I got a few. And I said, okay. How many is a few? And he says, I got 7. I was like, all right. Yeah, that's a few.
That's great. Yeah.
You know, I said, when was your last felony? And I forget what month it was, but we'll say, you know, for the sake of time, he said April. And I'm like, April, like last month? He said, yeah. All right. Well, what felonies you have? And he says, drugs, man, get you every time. So sure enough, this guy had drug felonies. And I said, okay, well, have you been through the drug court system? So in my state, we have a system where we're trying to get people into treatment and get them helped, because our, you know, correctional system doesn't correct. It's a punishment system. Like, I think we can all agree.
Yeah.
So they go to prison. It's not correcting their behavior. Like, you know, it's a punishment for, mm-hmm. you know, getting caught for doing something bad. Cause again, we all do bad stuff. Right. So really saying, there's this resource that exists here. How can I get you into this resource to then help benefit you? So getting him enrolled in a drug court, right? Saying, having that conversation with the liaisons in drug court. Hey, I got this guy, he needs to be in here. And sometimes you run into people who are burnout. You also run into people who are in jobs that they just really shouldn't be in. Mm-hmm. So I would get different things from different resources. Oh, well, they came here before and this happened. I'm like, okay, well, that was like 2 years ago. So first of all, we've all changed. Second of all, did you actually address the situation? So that's what I would find a lot too, is people just get so burnt out in their own jobs that when someone does come in for help, that person's already struggling. Just like we talked about with depression, it's hard enough to get out of bed. Right. If they found this resource on their own, holy hell. But if I gave the resource to them and said, show up to this appointment, the fact that they actually showed up, like, that's huge. That's huge.
That's so a big
really
step.
Trying to... Yeah. Have an open conversation with them. Say, look, what, you know, I'm not here to judge. I'm here to help. And then really listening to what their needs are and how we can pull in community resources to meet their needs to get them going again. It's a lot of multiple step things. So like housing first, oh yeah, sure. I'll get you into a house. That's not the end of it. Right. Mm-hmm. Because like I said, you know, we're talking about depression. We're talking about those identity crises. That's a huge change for people. You know, like last night I was sleeping on the cold, hard ground in the pouring down rain, and now I'm in a hotel room. Like that's a big mental shift for people.
It is. Yeah, it is. So I want to switch gears a little bit here. You know, still talking about your work with veterans here, but after you worked with the homeless veterans, you transitioned to a role as the suicide prevention program manager for the Oklahoma Army National Guard. And suicide prevention is one of the reasons why I started this podcast. After several people that I served with took their own lives, I decided I just couldn't sit around and wait to hear that someone else that I knew, or anybody really, any other veteran, took their lives. And I needed to do something to help. And here we are about 2 years later, and I'm still going. You know, it's just that important to me that, you know, people get the help that they need and resources are available to them. And so, you know, talking to people like yourself who offers this type of, you know, training and that type of stuff is really important to me, because I want to make sure that people know that there are resources like this available. Now I know we all have the, have heard about the 22 veterans a day statistic. And I think in recent years, that number has actually come down a bit, but it's a good thing, but we still quote the 22 anyways. I think this is probably going to be another loaded question, but how do we get that number even lower? What are some of the things that you do that works on, improving that number? I know you work with, you've worked with the National Guard, but you also work with other businesses and other organizations. What is it that you do to help identify these at-risk people and, get them the help that they need?
So the thing about that is, like, we're all at risk when it comes to suicide. So if you haven't been personally touched, you just don't know that you've been personally touched by it, right? Mm-hmm. So when it comes to suicide, it's quite interesting, especially when you talk about the numbers, is a lot of that has to deal with, are we willing to call it what it is? And it makes people uncomfortable. So the reason I think suicide is different than any other death is the self-blame. Mm-hmm. Right? Because if someone dies from, a heart attack or a clogged artery, right, we don't go back and question every hamburger we ever bought them. Right. Or, if somebody dies from, I don't really know how a lot of medical conditions work, but in my mind, I'm thinking diabetes because someone close to me has diabetes. Right. So if their blood sugars were so out of control that they ended up dying from it, am I going to go back and question every time I ever brought them a cookie? We don't, but when it comes to suicide, we do, right? Mm-hmm. I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have done that. When was the last time I called him? When was the last time I texted him, right? So it makes people uncomfortable. So when someone dies, right, people, it's so hard to accept if it's a suicide. So if it's an accident, it's a lot easier of a pill to swallow. Like, oh, it was an accident. Oh, that sucks. Right? The self-blame game doesn't kick in, but for suicides it does. And since people are so uncomfortable to talk about it and call it what it is, the numbers are going to fluctuate. So until we start saying, yes, this is a suicide, right, the numbers are never really going to be accurate. The other thing I always like to inform people of is overdoses are not always considered suicides. In fact, majority of the time, overdoses are considered accidents or unintentional. Oh, okay. So the reason for that is it's actually up to every state. The state determines how they categorize the deaths, and most err on the side of, was there a note left? Because we can't prove intention. Right. And again, if I say they died from an accidental overdose, that's a lot easier for people to handle than they died from suicide. So one big thing is talking about suicide, saying suicide, right? Even just saying suicide out loud makes people uncomfortable. So in a lot mm-hmm. of my trainings, I have people ask about suicide. And it's not, are you thinking about hurting yourself? Because when people are thinking about suicide, they're thinking about ending their hurt, right? So that's one of the things that you have to be super direct on, right? Are you thinking about suicide? Are you thinking about killing yourself? That's another option, but really just, are you thinking about suicide? Because saying suicide itself is almost like, when I've done interventions, it's kind of like she said it, now I can say it, now we can have that conversation.
Right. You've opened that door to that conversation. Yes. Right.
Yes. So and the other thing is that we're so quick. We're so quick all the time. We're so busy. We're so quick. I'm guilty of it. Definitely not perfect here. But what happens is we do things in such a quick manner, right? Where it's like, hey, how's it going? Good. How are you? Good. And we're running off. Right. Well, when people ask me how I'm doing, I normally have something to say, and they're like, I was just trying to be nice, right? And then it gets like super awkward because I was like, oh, I was actually gonna start a conversation with you. But that's that we don't do that anymore. So as a society, as a people, like, we're not communicating, we're not talking, holding the door open for someone. I mean, seriously, how many times is it like, I'm just gonna slip in the door real quick and not hold it open for the person behind me, right? But it's those like small acts that make mountains of wonders for people. Mm-hmm. So just talking about suicide helps suicide. So that's always the biggest myth, is like, oh my goodness, if I ask someone about suicide, or if I mention suicide, it's going to put the idea in their head. Well, let me tell you, it's out there. Okay. People know about it. It's a thing. Especially with the marketing of the 22 per day, right? Is people know that there are people suffering. And if we're not having conversations with people and checking in with people and just being honest and open, I think one of the other biggest, simplest things, right? So not just even saying suicide, right? is also, you know, when we ask people how they're feeling, is validating and not trying to relate, right? So a lot of the times people tell us a shitty story, right? And we're like, oh my God, yeah, here's my equally shitty story. And we're like, oh yeah, we're going to bond, right?
Right.
But that's actually not what happens.
No, so, it doesn't.
Like, how many times have we heard, oh, you got to eat your dinner because the starving kids in Africa, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So kind of the same concept, right? Is that there's always someone worse off than you. Yeah. But I am struggling right now.
Yeah.
So when we throw out these other things, it just, when someone tells you a shitty story, sometimes all you gotta do is be like, that freaking sucks. And I'll tell you, it makes wonders for people just to validate it.
And that's just sometimes all that they really are even needing in that conversation. So the reason why they're bringing it up is just the validation. They're not looking for a contest to see whose situation was worse. I've seen that a lot with veterans combat veterans, especially, my deployment was harder than yours. And, you know, it was one of those things where we were in firefights every day and then, mm-hmm. our base was rocketed every day, and you know, all these things that they come up with, and some of it may be true, some of it may just be puffing your chest out and that type of thing.
Great pissing contest.
But it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, someone is probably struggling with the fact that they experienced these traumas in their combat situation that they were in, and they might just need some validation. Say, yeah, man, that sucks.
Yeah.
You know, that was pretty shitty. And, now how do we deal with that and move forward from there?
I had that conversation with somebody once. They told me, everything they were telling me, I was like, whew, I can't find hope for this guy. Like, this is literally the shittiest story I've ever heard. Like, holy moly. So, when he got done telling me his story, I just told him, I was like, dude, that really effing sucks. And he said, thank you. And I was like, I mean, sorry, man. Like, I ain't got nothing else for you. That's a terrible situation.
Yeah.
Nobody else would validate him. Everybody else blamed him.
Oh, wow.
Well, we told you you shouldn't get with that girl. And we told you you shouldn't do this. And we told you that you shouldn't have been there. And, you should have listened to us. It's your fault. You're in this situation, right? Rather than just saying, man, that sucks.
Right.
It sucks.
And at the end of the day, you can't go back and change those things. You can't change the place that you're in or the people that you are with. It is what it is. It happened. And that's just how it is. Now you have to deal with it and move forward from it. The situation sucks. I don't know this person's situation specifically, but I've known enough shitty situations that I know kind of what you're talking about here. And, there's nothing you can do to change the past. So now I think the takeaway there is, how do you deal with the future after, dealing with this bad situation? Now I know with your company, you offer suicide prevention training, like resources to businesses and organizations. So what is it that you do with these companies and these organizations in terms of, training people on how to identify the kind of at-risk people, that, if you want to call it that, for suicide? I know you said we're all technically sort of at risk,
but
to identify someone who's maybe further down that path than somebody else.
Someone who's actively in crisis or actively struggling and just trying to make it through the day. So I tailor all of my trainings and presentations to really the needs of the organization. So one organization in particular, they had a lot of suicide attempts. So they reached out to me and they said, what are we missing? How are we not connecting with people? So I just came and had a conversation with them. And what I did was I did a pre and a post survey, and I asked people a lot of questions. And then I shared the results. Like, obviously it's anonymous, right? But I shared, 75% of you in this room have been in so much pain that you'd rather be dead than alive. Right. Wow. So really, for that one, talking about how are you treating each other on a daily basis? You know, are you helping build each other up?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many times, again, where we're just running. So the big focus there was really trying to get them to be aware that everyone there was struggling. So not just that one person who had attempted suicide or the three or four people who had attempted suicide, but out of the 50 people, right, we had a huge number that had thought about it. Mm-hmm. I also worked with another company. I came in, I did a very general touch base with them. They had a recent person had passed away in their company. So they wanted me to come in. I had 30 minutes, but I did multiple 30-minute presentations to catch all the different shifts, people kind of coming in on their breaks, that kind of thing. And then I worked with management on, okay, so these are your people that they're grieving, right? And the mm-hmm. grieving process is just going to come up when it comes up. Like,
right.
Let's be real. It could be today or it could be 10 years from now. So with that, like really training them further. So Assist is one of the licensed trainings that I have. It's an international based training. And with that one, it's 2 8-hour days, but it really teaches people. And it doesn't just teach people, it empowers people to act to the point. If someone is standing on a bridge, you feel empowered enough to walk up to that person and say, hey, what has you standing on the bridge here today?
Right.
And then walking them off the bridge. So it's a really in-depth training. I absolutely love it. I think it's life-changing. So for that, really working on the management team to say, hey, these are some skills you're going to need in the long term, because there might be someone coming in one day that's extra struggling. Like I think of when people come into work late, right? We all know that person who's like no time management, but why is it that they don't care about time management? I know somebody in my life like that. Or is it that all of a sudden they're chronically late? What's causing that lateness? What's going on in their life? So rather than being like, you need to be on time, why are you always late? Having a conversation saying, hey, you know, you're showing up late on a regular basis. What's going on here? So I do a lot of that, like talking to companies on how to approach situations from a human aspect rather than a disciplinary aspect, because I'm not saying, you know, let people get away with whatever, but I'm also saying like, there's oftentimes something's just going on in someone's life. Like when I tell people all the things that I've been through in the past year, I mean, we've all been through, I mean, 2020, worst year for everyone, not just COVID, right? That they're like, wait, you had this going on, you had that going on. I'm like, yeah, we have no clue the struggles that people bring in. We have no clue the life that they are battling on a daily basis. So something as simple as saying, hey, you've been coming into work late the last 2 weeks. Is there something going on that we need to talk about? And if they're just like, I'm just late. Okay. Well, you need to figure it, you need to correct yourself, but maybe that opens up the conversation, right? Because communicating, that can be the downfall of our society, but it can also be the greatest success. Having a conversation. So a lot of what I do is just talk to people about being leaders, how to have those conversations, especially those hard ones when you do feel like you need to ask about suicide. And then also what benefits and resources does the company already have or does the company need? So program evaluation. So companies who have EAP programs, is it enough? Do your employees know about it? Those kind of things. So that's some other stuff that I work on with companies too.
Yeah. And, you know, just kind of circling back to something I mentioned earlier, I've served with several people who have unfortunately taken their own lives, after deployment, that they survived the deployment where people were actively trying to kill them. And then they come home and something happened. And, I don't know the specific details for all of them and what was going on in their lives, but something made them think that, you know, ending their lives would be the better option. And that's, obviously that's not the case. You know, we don't want people to do that. You know, I would much rather have someone be here, tomorrow than, you know, having to have them make that decision. But there's also the other side of that is there's family members who were around those people. They had family. They had, some of them had wives, or, you know, they, at least they had parents and, you know, whatever. And those loved ones are now, like you said earlier, they're looking back and questioning everything that they did. Did I do this right? Did I say this the wrong way? Was I too harsh with whatever? And there's no right answer to, you know, like, oh, what did I do wrong or anything like that? Because, you know, again, you can't change the past, but you can change the future. So for people who maybe know someone who's, you know, maybe on that brink of, you know, they're having some rough times and they're having some troubles, what are some things that they can do to get them help, you know, to move away from that decision and get them a little bit further away from that so that they don't end up becoming another statistic and they continue to move on and thrive?
I think one thing is having that open conversation. So having an open conversation really helps and giving them the time and space. So a lot of the time we want to poke, tell us, and they're just not ready. So sometimes just saying, hey, I've noticed these things. You're seeming a little bit not like your typical self, maybe like, you know, being late or, you know, being depressed, staying in your pajamas all day or, you know, those kind of things. And I'm really concerned about you. And I want to know, is there anything I can do to help? And again, just asking outright. Some of the ways that we word it is, hey, I've noticed that you've been showing up late to work. You're not dressing like yourself. You seem a bit depressed. And usually when people start showing signs like this, they might be thinking about suicide. Is that something that you've been thinking about? And I'll tell you what, of everyone I've ever asked that, no one has ever gotten mad at me for asking that.
Right.
So it's either, oh gosh, no, I'm just having a really rough week. Thank you for caring. Or yeah, actually, I have been, these months have been rough. So just taking that time and space to have that conversation with someone and knowing we're busy, knowing we have a million things on our schedule, right? But if I didn't show up to this podcast interview and you'd be sitting around and be like, well, this is weird. You probably maybe call me or text me or send me an email and like, okay, well, I hadn't heard from her. If I then later told you, hey, I'm so sorry, I was on the phone call with somebody who was thinking of suicide, right? You're going to be like, oh, wow. Yeah. No big deal, right? Nothing else matters because we literally have a life on the line. So when we put that into perspective of like, I'm going to be late to, I'm going to miss whatever, right? This person is missing out on life because whatever it is draining them. So giving them some time, giving them some compassion and love when it comes to resources, it really kind of, it depends on what's going on in the person's life, right? Because I've done an intervention where I was like, all right, I got to get you connected to like 15 people, but really hearing what is that big thing right now? What's that feather on the camel's back, right? Because when it comes to suicide, right, it's the everyday life stressors that just box us in until we're in this black box and we can't see the light.
Yeah.
So sometimes it just takes that little bit to get the light and we can start peeling away all those stressors. So if we find that the big thing, right, that's the big thing to focus on and always getting professional help, right? If you are so depressed and you have 99 things going on in your life, you can't handle them all, right? Mm-hmm. Shoot, I can't handle the 99 things I have going on in my life. That's why I have assistants, right? That's why I pay people to do things for me. Right. So, you know, it's just like that. Like when you're depressed and you're overwhelmed, right? Getting help. So saying, I need to talk to somebody who can help me lay these things out, right? There's a lot of great services. Given Hour actually is a nonprofit. That is a nonprofit where doctors can donate their time. So veterans, first responders, anyone who's dealt with a natural disaster. So in Oklahoma here, we have tornadoes a lot, right? So that's an opportunity for you to go on there, find a provider in your area that even if it's just an hour to sit down to just clear your mind and head, right? Mm-hmm. Another really great, easy one is the crisis line. And I know people are like, oh my gosh, that's a big thing. Like I could call a stranger. Well, first of all, you're calling a stranger. So they're unbiased, right?
Right.
So they're not going to pick sides. They're going to listen to you. Right. So they're not going to be like, well, I told you last week, you know, like your friends are like, I've told you for the 10th time. Right. The other thing is that it's out there. It's a service. So if we don't use it, we lose it. So if you're feeling overwhelmed one day and you need an unbiased opinion, you can call that line and say, look, I'm really overwhelmed right now, or I'm really worked up right now. And I just need someone to talk to for a minute so I can just take a breath. Right. When you call that line, you tell them that, you're like, okay, well, let's talk about it. What's got you so overwhelmed and worked up? Because I've had that conversation a couple of times too. I had a young kid call me once and just was like, da, 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 da. And I was kind of like, okay. You know, for him, he's like super overwhelmed. And then he said, oh my goodness, I can't believe I just called a stranger about this. This is, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry I wasted your time. I said, you didn't waste my time. Do you feel better? And he was like, yeah, I do feel better. I was like, then you didn't waste my time. Like, we're good. So it's the same thing with the crisis line, is you can call in. And I really just encourage everyone to at least call in once, because you can call in and say, hey, I'm not in crisis right now, but I just want to know what the process was like. And if I was, or if someone I love is, how would that conversation go? Or what kind of resources would you offer them? Because most crisis lines get routed to a local call center.
Okay.
So you're getting local people. Also, there's 211. So it's kind of in between 411 and 911, is you can call in and say, hey, I need shelter. I need food. I need clothing. I'm looking for mental health resources. I'm looking for substance use resources. And they'll be able to find and connect you to local resources in your area. And again, that's typically answered by a local community person. So in Oklahoma, we have two major call centers in our two major cities. So if you call in and you're like, I'm from, you know, middle of nowhere, Oklahoma, chances are they're going to know where that's at.
Right.
So that also helps in the conversation too.
Right.
But yeah, there's tons of resources out there. There's tons of great national resources and databases to get services and to get more help for people.
Yeah, that's great. And I, like I said, I've known people who've been affected by this. I've actually interviewed a mother of a soldier who committed suicide, and just hearing the pain in her voice, and, you know, like the regret and the overthinking, not overthinking, but, you know, wishing she had done things differently. Yeah. And all that stuff. I just want to make sure that other people who are out there who might be dealing with a similar situation just knows that there are resources available. So you don't have to go this alone. There, you might not be able to handle it on your own for your own reasons, because, you know, while you want to help this person because, you know, you love them and you want to help them as best as you can, but you may not have those resources or the know-how to, really give them the help that they really need. But there are resources available, and, you know, some of the ones that you mentioned are perfect for this. Between the Veterans Crisis Line and the 211, you know, resources and things like that, really, you know, being able to dig down to what it is that they need, and then you know, offering the right assistance at the right time, I think is really going to make a difference. So I really appreciate that bit of insight there.
Yeah. And the crisis line is actually going to be going to a 3-digit number too, which is super exciting, because I don't know why it took so long, but it did. So it'll actually be going to a 3-digit number, and that should be being launched within the next year. So it'll make it super easy. You don't have to like Google crisis line to get the number.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I know there's, you know, websites have that number on, you know, all over the place. So if you Google it, you're probably going to find the right number, you know, anyways, but it's, you know, just like 911, you don't want to have to remember this 10-digit number to get emergency services, especially when your mind maybe is not in the right place. You know, it's much easier to remember a short 3-digit number. So that's great. And I'm glad to see that that's coming around, you know, hopefully in the near future. Is there anything else that we maybe didn't touch on that you might want to offer to the listeners, as far as other advice or resources, or really anything that we didn't cover?
Oh, there's so many resources out there, so I could spend an hour alone talking on that. I think the big thing that I just want to leave with is really remembering that we're all human, mm-hmm. right? We're all human. We're all struggling. We're all dealing with our own life. And just taking that extra minute sometimes with people is that people are people. And if we be more human to each other, we can make a world of difference.
That's wonderful. I really appreciate that little insight there too. So, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. Where can people go to get in touch with you and to find out more about what you do?
So the best way to reach me is going to be through my website. So good old www.rosebud, R-O-S-E-B-U-D-C-L-L-C, rosebudcllc.com. So www.rosebudcllc.com. You'll have my contact information, a little bit more about the trainings that I'm doing. You can sign up for our newsletter that has tips, and we also give shout outs to different podcasts and different resources. So
awesome. Yeah. And I will have links to your website and you know, any of your social media sites available in the show notes for people who might want to get in touch with you, so they can find out about you and follow you, you know, wherever on social media, wherever they yes. happen to be. So and they can get in touch with you that way. So thank you again for joining me and sharing a little bit of what you do and the process around, you know, trying to help these veterans, you know, between the homelessness and the suicide prevention. It really is, you know, great work that you're doing. I really, you know, applaud your efforts that you're doing here.
Well, thank you for having me on, and I appreciate you and what you're doing, because just giving people a platform to have a voice and to hear more from others is huge and extremely beneficial. So I appreciate you and your service.
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.